if being good at relationships meant staying together forever, which it doesn't, if it did, then I'd have a problem. But I've always lived that being good at relationship is actually about being truthful and honest and real.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
It's Violet Benson, your favorite meme queen and the big sis you didn't ask for, but need. Welcome to Almost Adulting.
Almost Adulting. Almost Adulting.
Are you ready?
Hi, besties, and welcome to a brand new, beautiful, Almost Adulting episode, the largest self-help podcast and movement, your number one destination for personal growth and mental health. I'm your big sister and your host and best friend and everything in between, Violetta Benson. And today I have a guest that has been on before, Mark Groves. You know him also as Create the Love. He has been on my podcast numerous times, including in February, where we discuss dating and relationships. And today we dive into codependency patterns and how to create the love that you desire. And we also are going to be discussing his book that just came out, Liberated Love, How to Release Codependent Patterns. It's amazing. It's beautiful. And I will also share a link in the bio description of today's episode so you can go ahead and purchase it if you are interested. It dives into everything that has to do with relationships and why you crave certain types of relationships. And again, how to release yourself from codependent patterns. Before we get started with today's episode, which is part two from the original episode we recorded in February, I would like to say if you can please go ahead and subscribe to my podcast if you're not already subscribed, and to make sure to download today's episode so you never miss this episode again whenever you want to go back to it. And lastly, if you can please leave me a 5-star review in the Apple Podcast app, that'll be amazing. Not only do these reviews help me tremendously, but I read all of them and it just allows me to know that I am continuing to produce and create content that you are happy with. So again, if you can please take like 2 seconds of your time and leave me a 5-star review right now for my podcast, that'll be amazing. Anyway, aside from that, please go ahead and enjoy today's episode. I hope you take as much as you can from it, and I love you. Mwah. Bye. Mike Groves is a human connection specialist. He's the founder of Create the Love and the host of the Mark Groves podcast. I've been on it. He's been on my podcast before. Mark's work bridges the academic and the human, inviting people to explore the good, the bad, and the downright ugly, and the beautiful sides of connection. He is also a father. And he is also a husband. He's a friend. He's a son. And he's so much more than all that. And he also has a book coming out. What is it called?
Liberated Love.
Liberated Love. So we will definitely let you guys know where you can find that book when it comes out in the description of the bio. Without further ado, why don't we get started? So I kind of want to dive into your book, and I want to dive into specifically chapter 2. Chapter 2 focuses on codependency. And the reason I want to discuss chapter 2 is because codependency seems to be kind of a topic throughout the book, and a lot of people experience that. And one thing that I first wanted to kind of address with that is, would you say that codependency is a common challenge in relationships, whether it's platonic or romantic?
Yeah, I would say it's in most relationships, if not all, till it's not.
And because most people don't even realize it.
They don't. And it's, I would argue, like evolutionarily, it's sort of what has programmed us, in that if you think about it, being parts of tribes, being parts of communities, humans really have two needs. They have the need to be authentic and they have the need to belong. But when our authenticity threatens our belonging usually wins. We give up being our authentic self-expressed self to maintain membership to families and groups. So if you think about that, inherent is that in that is that I have to abandon who I am to be in a relationship, to maintain a family. And that's true for a lot of people. That's true in religions generally, not always, but a lot of the time. Like, I have to have these sets of behaviors so that you still love me and you still keep me close. And if we think evolutionarily, you spoke about this on my podcast, that like evolutionarily, that if you left the group, you died.
Right. Back then during the cave days, the reason community was created was in order to survive so you wouldn't get eaten by a lion. So you needed to have a safe space for community. And in turn, it continues on now where people feel the safest without even realizing. So when they hear the word community, they're like, yeah, I want to be part of a community. And even I used to always say, oh, I'm not like that. I'm an individual because I got an Aquarius moon. And, you know, I do my own thing. I walk to the beat of my own drum. And I didn't realize, oh, I'm actually part of communities, even on the internet, where I search for people who validate what I feel, who think the way right. I think. That's already part of a community, whether a political side that you lean onto, or a community where I talk about zodiac signs, and then I find my other friends who talk about zodiac signs. That's my community. So as much as I thought, oh, I'm so different. No, it's ingrained in us. Really, we all seek community in order to feel safe.
Right. So that idea of codependency is really sourcing safety, right, and security. And the real key to how we see it is at the expense of yourself, at the expense of your own needs, your own safety, your own self-expression. And in doing that, you don't get to live a fully authentic, self-expressed life. And we do it to maintain connection. You know, right. We've talked about it throughout this podcast, this like idea that I'm not going to be all of me, because if I'm all of me, you might not choose me anymore. Mm. And if you don't choose me, then I'm not safe, then I'm not loved, then I'm not worthy.
I like the fact that you said the codependency is actually more common than we believe, and it's in most relationships, if not all, because I think we're so used to thinking of extremes. So when you hear codependency, you think, well, I don't think that I'm going to die if my partner leaves me tomorrow. Right. Like, I'll be fine. So there's no codependency. So I like the fact that we have to remove whatever definition we think there's about codependency and understand that there's so many other things that make us codependent, because usually those are the relationships where out of nowhere something happens and you're just like, wait, I lost myself in this relationship. When did this happen? I was never in a codependent relationship.
Right.
But now, who am I? I don't, like, you break up and you think he took all the best parts of me with him.
Right.
No, he didn't. It's because you were in a codependent relationship you never realized, and you slowly end up focusing, putting your all into the relationship. You start putting your all into him and you put nothing into yourself. And what do you expect? You were left with nothing.
Right. And we think like giving up our dreams for a relationship is romantic, forgetting about our needs, stop hanging out with our friends. All these things become natural. This idea that we erase ourselves in order to be completed by another or complete another. We even sometimes present as needy, present as broken, present as having problems, so the other person has a role to fix us. Like, I remember reading about this couple in a book from Harriet Lerner, where she talks about how the couple was so intertwined that when one of them got healthy, the other got sick. And when the other got healthy, the other got sick. They were never healthy at the same time. Think about that. If I don't need you, or you don't need me, we don't feel safe. So we unconsciously create illnesses in order to keep each other.
Wow.
And I would argue that at the core of a lot of autoimmune is trauma. And so at the core of even why we might create pain and suffering is sometimes to, like, I've worked with people who have autoimmune that kicks in when they're 5, 7, 10 years old, because they needed attention from their parent. So you see that there's, we might create addictions to keep people close. You know, and the traditional idea of codependency is normally allocated to Al-Anon, like relationships with people in who are actively an addict or in recovery. But this pattern exists in so many relationships. And my friend who's a Terry Cole, who's a codependency expert, she talks about how high-functioning codependency, like, we're overly invested in the outcomes of other people. And think about that. That's so many of us. Like, when you think about, like, for me, what was so subtle about it is, here I've monetized my codependency. I have an account called Create the Love. I teach people how to be in relationship. And you think about it, a lot of people who are in caregiving roles, nurses, doctors, dietitians, physios, coaches, therapists, they have actually found a way to monetize their adaptive strategy from childhood, which is to take care of other people. And they've now turned it into a job, because it is a superpower. It is a superpower because they're highly attuned. But what they don't see is that they're often overfunctioning, they're often overgiving, and they are invested in people's outcomes, right?
Right. So then
they often need their client to need them. Not always true, but often.
I was listening to that because I'm thinking, wait, but I have avoidant attachment style. So then where do I fit in? But then I realize it's because even though I have avoidant attachment style since a child, I've learned that there's no room for my emotions.
Right.
Which is also one of the reasons I just distanced myself, because it's not safe. So there's no room for my emotions. So now I'm always there helping everyone else. And then the end of the day, I feel so drained. So again, I ended up accidentally creating no room for my emotions.
Right. Isn't that wild?
Yeah. But I also enjoy where I'm learning more about myself. And
well, yeah. You know, as I said on my pod about you, that you live your life very out loud, the transformation. And I think that's why people are so drawn to your work. Because
well, I'm just a very curious person.
Yeah. But you're also like open about your vulnerabilities and your challenges. And that allows other people to witness through. Like I do the same. I'm very open about the process I go through in hopes that the younger versions of me can learn through what I've been through so that they don't have to go through what I've gone through.
Exactly.
You know, and I think through writing this book, our hope is that, and I believe is true, the way it's laid out is very simple. It's like people can read this and learn about it and learn, like I've been in this game for 18 years, like intentionally in the relational world. And I've learned so much, learned from so many teachers, Kylie the same, and it's all in one book. Like that's pretty wild. It's actually wild to know that when you make a book, that's actually what's in it. You're like, this is like not thick enough considering
That's so true. With me writing my book, I literally had to just break it into chapters and it's my whole life path.
Right.
It is crazy to think, okay, so you're telling me in 14 chapters, it just kind of gets to it?
Well, that's why we buy books, is because we can learn what someone has learned in a lifetime. Think of the best teachers. Think of, like, I've had books that have totally transformed my life.
And then you go back to rereading them at a different stage of your life, and it means something completely different in that moment.
Totally.
So my sister is going to a wedding in a month from now, and she asked me to help her find the perfect dress. And of course she came to me because I'm Cuonco, a fashionista. I love clothes. I love shopping. And she was looking basically for a beautiful dress for that wedding occasion, but also on a budget since she has 3 children and they just opened a 3rd doggy daycare. I guided her to go on lulus.com. Why lulus.com? I feel like it's been like my best kept secret. Not only do they have amazing dresses for like every occasion, whether it's for like brunch with the girls on a Sunday, so it's like a Sunday dress, like a summer spring dress. They have beautiful dresses for your birthday, for a birthday party, late night, date night, girls night, for a wedding, to be a guest. They have outfits for every single moment. Why do I love Lulus? It's because they're feminine, they're playful, they're approachable, they're reliable. Lulus has this amazing value and quality for the price. I love their clothes for the quality, and I love their clothes even more for the price. There's no occasion the Lulus can't handle, okay? There's an outfit for all of life's moments. Lulu has the dresses, the outfits that you will remember with your friends and you will never forget. So not only did my sister buy the perfect dress for the wedding she's going to a month from now, but she also already bought her birthday dress, which is like 6 months from now, okay? I promise you, you can't go wrong with shopping on Lulus. I love them. So visit lulus.com right now and you can use my code adulting at checkout for 20% off of your first purchase. I didn't even give that to my sister. So you guys get that special treatment that even my sister didn't get. So again, that is lulus.com and use my code adulting for 20% off of your first order to buy your perfect dress for whatever occasion you currently have in your life. New customers only, terms apply. Let me guess, your medicine cabinet is crammed with stuff that doesn't work for you anymore. You're still not sleeping. You're still hurt. You're stressed out. Guess what? That's how it used to be for me. That's why I decided to just clear my cabinet with all these medicines that are not working for me and then reset my health with CBD from CB Distillery. It's been such a game changer for me. CB Distillery's targeted formulations are made from the highest quality clean ingredients, emphasis on the clean. There's no fluff, there's no filters, it's just pure, effective CBD solutions designed to help support your health. In 2 non-clinical surveys, 81% of customers experienced more calm, 80% said that CBD helped with their pain after physical activity, and an impressive 90% said that they slept better with CBD, me being one of them. If you struggle with a health concern and you haven't found relief, then it's time to make that change like I did with CB Distillery. And with over 2 million customers, me being one of them, and a solid 100% money back guarantee, CB Distillery is a source to trust. I currently, right now, for my besties, have a 20% discount to get you guys started. All you have to do is visit cbdistillery.com and use my code ADULTING for 20% off, okay? That is cbdistillery.com using my code ADULTING. Once again, that is cbdistillery.com with my code ADULTING for 20% off. You're welcome, besties. So do you mind kind of giving me some examples of a codependent behavior and then responses?
A lot of the things I mentioned, things like abandoning yourself, trying to control other people's outcomes, overly invested in other people's outcomes, being in dynamics with any forms of abuse, relationships with people with addictions. The easiest way for people to identify it is actually not prioritizing themselves. Right? Like, think about how often we do things at the cost of us. Now, self-abandonment and compromise are very different. And I think that's hard for people who experience codependency and people-pleasing to differentiate. And we would also see people-pleasing behavior as being codependent. So like, I want everyone to like me. I want everyone to be okay with me. I want everyone to like not have any disappointment in me, judgment. That's why actually a great way to heal codependency is to become create a creator account on social media, because for every wound you have, there is a troll specifically for your wound. There are bot farms specifically for you to work on not wanting to, like, for me, if people don't like me, I'm not safe. That's the like internal belief. But I'm pretty outspoken. I share a lot of feelings that I have and a lot of thoughts I have, and some people don't like the things I say. It's the greatest way to work on my codependency. Wow. Because can I be with them not being okay with what I think and feel when it's true for me? And I've had to learn that that's the only necessary way to live, right? And a lot of these people have just like a profile picture of a cat. You know, they're not even real people.
Yeah, you have to take things with a grain of salt.
Pancakes is commenting on my shit.
She's like, you're a cunt. And I'm like, I swear to God, I told her to relax.
Yeah,
but
don't,
you know,
write that.
She's a passionate girl.
Her
it's
paw
not me.
Got carried away.
I'm so sorry, my cat wrote that. That's the beauty of knowing yourself, because if you don't know who you are, someone else who's not sure about themselves will tell you.
Right.
And when you don't know, and when you know who you are so well, someone else who is ready to just burn through everything and burn a bridge will not even, you won't even feel a slightly anything from them.
Right.
You know what I mean? But that's all, that's the beauty of social media, is that the thing about social media, when we see haters and all that, it also brings out things we feel deep inside, because when you know who you are and someone tells you, hey, you're stupid.
Right.
If I think I'm not stupid and I feel good about myself today, I would say, well, this person clearly has bad judgment. Sorry. Right. Or like, you're ugly. Well, sounds like you need glasses. Goodbye. Right. But if I woke up today and I felt bad about myself, and one of my biggest insecurities is that I'm not smart enough, because when I was growing up, my mom used to always make me feel kind of stupid. And then my teachers validated that with their weird look. And then one time I got a C and I looked at the C and that validated. Yep, I am stupid. And throughout my life, I would pay attention because I'm looking for confirmation bias. I paid attention when people told me I'm stupid. So today, I'm going on the internet and I don't feel that great about myself because I don't really know who I am. And, here's a troll and he says, you're a fucking idiot. And I look at that and instead of thinking, this person doesn't know me, they're having a bad day, I say, voila, there it is.
Yeah.
He sees right through me. He knows exactly. And I go, that ruined my date. That one comment ruined everything, blah, blah. The only reason words can affect you so badly is if you believe that some part of it is true.
Amen. And you know, that deep fundamental belief that you have about yourself, as you're saying, the frictions you have in your life are inviting you to liberate yourself from that. You know, and what I think is interesting about the internet, which is a recent invention for our biological systems, is we are not designed to face 10,000 people's perspectives about us.
It's a lot.
It's way too much for our system to hold. That's why we need good community. That's why we need good friends to actually help filter the information. But also how easy it is to get trapped in ideological bubbles, right? To like, I'm right. And if I'm right and not curious, then I feel safe and secure. And so it's not a real, true, authentic safety. It's like, if I tell you, if I'm afraid that you're going to leave me, so what I do is I tell you I need to get engaged. That doesn't actually make us more secure.
it's actually going to do the opposite too.
Right. And well, it's going to make me want to distance. But the other thing is that you see couples do this a lot. They meet their needs with wants. So if I feel insecure about where we stand in a relationship, it might be, I want you to post a picture of us on social media. But really, I'm just afraid that other people don't know about us. And if other people know about us, which why wouldn't other people know about you? But that's a whole other thing. But it's like, you want a picture, but no, you really want to know that they choose you. You don't want them to leave, so you get engaged. That gives you elation for a little bit. And then the truth of your relationship happens again. So then you get married. And then the truth of your relationship happens again. And then you have a kid. And then the truth of your relationship happens again. So we like spend our lives often meeting our needs, safety, security, love, chosen, with wants.
That is so interesting, right? Because the person who's asking just posts a photo of us. So then it's that valid, it's a want, but they think, but they're not saying the deeper thing where I wish you showed me off more. I wish you went under the rooftop and screamed my name. I wish you were more romantic. Like, I wish you claimed me, because some of it, like, I love when my partner claims me. So instead of saying, I wish you claimed me more because that's what makes me feel secure, they go, I wish you would post a picture of us. So then the partner posts a picture of them. And then they think, well, I did what that person wanted. Right. But then like 2 weeks later, there's another complaint, or a month later, there's a complaint. Then the other person thinks, what the hell? I did what you wanted. Why are you still mad at me? And it's because the first person didn't actually look from within, because they also think, well, I thought that would satisfy me. I thought that'd be enough. Well, that's because you didn't actually think within yourself. Where is this coming from, really?
Right. And we think that the picture is going to solve it. Now, it doesn't mean, because I do want to validate, that sometimes people don't post pictures because they're actually terrified of closeness, commitment, it being public. And that can be just from a fear-based, authentic, avoidant place.
Yeah.
But it still needs to be confronted. You know, I dated this one woman who I remember when we went hiking. We were like 2 months in, but I would have posted a picture of us. I was pretty into us. And we went.
So you.
Yeah, it was super me.
We went hiking and I was going to propose.
At the top of the mountain. But this is actually, that's a great point, because I was not being discerning. She was freshly out of a relationship. She had shared feelings, like she wasn't sure at the speed, etc. But I was like, this is great. She's unavailable on some level. Amazing. It was a perfect wound. But she gets me to take a picture of her at the top of the mountain, and she posts it with no mention of me. Now, I would have understood, like, hey, you know what? I'm not ready to be like me and her at the top of a mountain, but like, had a great hike today. Tag me in it, right? None of that. And I remember thinking to myself, fast forward, shocker, we broke up pretty soon after. But I remember thinking to myself, first off, why am I so attracted to unavailable people who just got out of relationships? And number two, I will never be in a relationship ever again with someone who doesn't celebrate me, ever. And that was one of the deal breakers that I created from that, that I lived from that moment forward, and it served me forever.
Number three, you guys were also going in different patterns.
Totally a different direction. We broke up because it was obvious we were not meant to be long-term.
But I think that's also a lot of the problem when you enter a relationship with work. There's a contract of what's expected of you and what you get in return. When we enter relationships with friends and we enter relationships romantically, there's no contract and there's no actual discussion. We most of the time assume the way I love, they love. Why expectations in the relationship, platonic, friendships, or romantic, they have the same. So here's an example. You just mentioned something that threw me off, because one of the things whenever I date someone, biggest issue, but I can tell it bothers them, I don't post them. But for me, I'm thinking, well, we just started dating. I'm still figuring this out. And I want to, this is the one thing that gets to be for me. Because everything else in my life is public. And it's like the one thing that like I actually enjoy it so much. And because I value it so much, I want to really be in the moment. I don't want to make it some fake thing that it's not. So that's how I feel. But the other person will think, well, she posts everything else. But why is she ashamed of me? She's not posting me. Because we're not communicating. So we both have different feelings of why we're doing something. And then you mentioned that we were together for 2 months. She posted a picture of herself and she didn't even tag me. Because for you, 2 months is, that's enough time. We are serious. But potentially for her, or like me, 2 months to tag somebody, my partner, whoa, like, I don't want to scare him away, A. But B, 2 months, that's like not long enough. Why would I tag him in this picture of me?
Yeah, I think her not tagging me was just the evidence of what I already knew.
For right? yourself, because right. you needed someone more on the same path as you.
Right, and I'm saying, like, I recognize her not tagging me was just showing the truth that she wasn't ready. She wasn't on the same path as you're saying. And also, why would I want to be in a relationship with someone who doesn't
yeah,
want to be
on
the same
path? Yeah, but then what happened when you got back with Kylie? You guys dated for 3 months. So I bet you...
We were in each other's stories a few
times. But that's because
times
you were already together and you are public figures.
Yeah, like I'd say when you're a public figure, which I would, you know, you definitely are, there's also people get invested in your relationships.
Yeah,
they get invested in your relationship outcomes. So I would imagine that plays into it. Like who did Violetta choose? Like holy moly. And
only
if it doesn't work out,
up,
that's
going to
be
I'm
a podcast. Right. And so... I get that. Like, I understand that because when Kylie and I broke up, here we are both people who talk about relationships. And it's like, if being good at relationships meant staying together forever, which it doesn't, if it did, then I'd have a problem. But I've always lived that being good at relationship is actually about being truthful and honest and real. And so in our breakup, I shared that. And in our coming back together, we had to still retain what's sacred to us. Right? Like when you are a public person, which I would argue a lot of people probably listening are somewhat public in some way, maybe creators, maybe YouTubers, maybe whatever, there still needs to be something that is held as sacred for the relationship, which I think you're speaking to about your media outlets are not for every part of your life.
But I also like everything what you're saying, because thinking about it, I guess it had my partners communicate to me. This actually makes me feel love if we're more public. And I'm not doing this to use you in any way to gain whatever I'm trying to gain, but like
trying to get followers.
Yeah, it's more.
I never thought about that. That's probably
true
too.
Yeah, it's more like I feel loved. Then, of course, I would hear and I'd be like, oh, okay, that's not really how I feel loved. But if that makes them feel safer, like I want to make it, I may want to make a safer space for them. But that's only if I would have been willing to finally, you know, work on myself and learn how to be more accepting of the other person. But instead, what would happen is when I would feel like they're upset where I'm not posting them, and then I feel this weird pressure to do it without them even asking, because what I do as a child, I'm constantly sacrificing myself.
Right.
Like, what do people need from me without actually asking anyone? So then I would post something on my close friends, or I would do something to kind of make them feel like, okay.
Right.
And I would grow resentment. I would feel resentful towards them, and it would come out in a passive aggressive way without realizing. Then when we break up, the resentment now it's huge, because right. It's like, why the F did I do this and this and this for you? And it's not even my person. It's like, no one asked you.
Right.
But that's the whole point of when you do things for someone else in the hope that they'll, okay,
that's
are you happy
martyr.
Now?
That's
yeah.
Martyr.
I was just, it made me resentful because I wasn't doing changes for myself.
Right. And that martyrdom is like, look at all the things I did, and that, you know, can be weaponized. And then we also then feel bad. And resentment is 100% of the time.
I know. I was, for me, the resentment was as I was doing it.
Yeah. Resentment is 100% of the time not prioritizing and honoring yourself.
Exactly.
Always.
Do you wish you can listen to this episode with no ads at all? Do you wish that you can also get more of me, Violetta Benson? Then look no further. You're not dreaming, because right now that is possible for you. Not only if you subscribe to my premium podcast will you be able to get all of my episodes moving forward with no ads whatsoever on Tuesdays and Thursdays, but you will also get 2 extra episodes that only you guys, the subscribers, will be able to have, from Dating University to astrology stuff, to Benson Knows Best, to Confession Corners, and so much more. Only you will have access to it. That is on almostadulting.supercast.com to subscribe. Again, that is almostadulting.supercast.com. To subscribe today to the premium podcast that have ad-free episodes plus 2 extra episodes a week, you can find the link in the bio description of today's episode. And again, that is almostadulting.supercast.com. Love you, besties. Okay, so with codependency, I'm kind of wondering, what are some root causes of codependency, and how can individuals begin to start to recognize that? Because obviously it doesn't happen oh, codependency happened because with my boyfriend that we started to date. It comes from somewhere else.
Yeah, where? There's an access point to it that is through your childhood almost always. So it's through having the way that your family blueprint was. And in the book, we go through your relationship blueprint, like the ability to navigate and figure out where these come from. But I would say it's almost always, we have to say, because there might be 0.01% of the time that's not. But the access point to it is a template that you were learned, a blueprint that you learned when you were young. So having parents that you had to care for, one or both, a parent with a chronic illness, a child or a sibling in the family who took up most of the space, maybe was someone who acted out. Maybe you had a parent who was emotionally erratic. Maybe you had a parent who is an addict, a narcissist. You know, like there's all these different ways, but what it happened is that somewhere along the line, you learned how that the way to be safe and survive was to attune and predict other people's feelings and caretake them and make yourself second and erase yourself sometimes completely in order to survive in your family system. And the other way it can happen too is if you have parents who weren't around, not present, left, because if you had needs, who would hear them? So you become needless. And so you actually orient your life around other people's needs. So both of these are just ways that we create safety and security and keep people close and sometimes keep people at a distance, you know, because we talk about like the one of the masks that we wear and we go through different masks and how and that we wear. One of them is independence, overt independence. And, you know, that's like, I do everything myself. I've got this. I'm good. Mm-hmm. But really, we're not good. And that's okay. But it's actually like being with the truth that if I just do it all on my own, no one can let me down. And so then we would go to the origin of like, where were you let down? Really healthy relating is, you know, we see that the balance of learning how to be really good at relationship is how do I hold on to who I am and even grow who I am and be in relationship with who you are and allow that to grow and nurture it too. Most of us erase ourselves for the relationship or get rid of relationships for ourselves.
Yes.
Right. So how do I have a need and bump up with your need, right? Like where neither of us actually has to erase what we need or give up what we need. And that's why I was saying earlier, the difference between compromise and self-abandonment is that compromise serves the growth of the relationship. You might feel a disappointment. Like, let's say my wife is like, we need to move to this place because there's a school program I want to do. I'm super excited about it. And I don't want to move to Minneapolis. No offense if you live in Minneapolis. But I don't want to go there. But I'll do it. And I might have to give up something for that. But I know that it's in service of us, the relationship in her. And I can still, you know, figure it out from there. But self-abandonment would be that I'm doing something that completely requires me to eradicate my needs, my wants, my desires.
Well, I think I'm also noticing the difference between the two is that a lot of times we believe it's something has to be black and white. It's the end of all end. I must do this in order to get this outcome versus kind of like I don't have to completely forget about myself in order to make that work. I don't have to completely stop taking the walks that I love taking. Like I don't have to completely stop my hobby. Because my boyfriend has a different hobby and the only thing we can bond on is this hobby. I can still do my own hobby on the side while picking up a new hobby with my partner. So it's like I think people forget and they think they always have to sacrifice. They always have to give something up to gain something else versus, okay, this is here and now there's another thing here.
You can both win.
You can have two.
Right. You know, and I think just in the interest of how people are socialized, that self-erasure is more socialized to women. Like giving up themselves, eradicating themselves. And really, if we get into that, that's more due to the patriarchal structure of not only society, but also how families have been structured, primary, you know, breadwinner, quote unquote.
You speak on the mask. So since right now you did mention the independent and there's a martyr and you had other masks that I wrote down. So I did want to cover them really quick. Yeah. So the other masks that you talk about, you have Mr. and Mrs. Independent, you have the perfectionist, you have the savior, you have the performer, you have the damsel in distress, you have the playboy, the martyr, the good guy, good girl, the spiritual. And in your first chapter, and you talk about the different masks, and you already covered two of them, you say how we all wear different masks in a relationship, completely different ones. So I am going to ask you the different masks that you listed in the book, and I just kind of want to know the most common masks that we tend to wear and what each one means. So let's start with the perfectionist.
So when we put on these masks, we'll sometimes wear more than one, and we might wear different ones with different relationships. And if you think about this, this is really so that we can adapt to creating the most amount of safety. We're like chameleons, you know? And so the perfectionist is about, it's really that nothing is ever enough. You know, it's like I'm always wanting to highly achieve and do things perfectly in hopes that my parent or my primary caregiver notices that I'm finally enough, that I, and you know what always happens, and this is the wound of the perfectionist, is that they achieve the thing and then they never even take time to celebrate. There's already a new bar, a new thing. And so the trick of it is that it's never enough. Because what fuels the creating is actually the unworthiness. So it could be the path of what makes people some of the most successful people in the world, but it's still fueled from unworthiness. When I have enough money, people will notice me. When I create the perfect thing, when I'm perfect, I do it through my body, my food, look at my abs, look at my ass. It's like, it's never enough.
But the perfectionist in a relationship, because it can also be someone that's so focused on making the relationship look perfect, yeah, on the outside, sure, that then they don't actually focus on the intimacy with the partner.
Well, yeah, it's like this highly curated, wanted to appear good. A highly correlated predictor of divorce is actually the cost of the ring. The more expensive it is, the bigger it is, the more likely they are to get divorced. Which I always thought that's fascinating, because I would imagine that's because if you look at the ring, you won't look at us.
Oh. Right?
And so what you're saying, I think, is relevant to that is like, if you look at my straight A's, you won't see that I feel unworthy. If you look at my perfectly curated outside, the way I dress, the way I am, you won't notice my pain. You know, if you see our relationship as being perfect and our social media feed perfect, you won't know that we actually have a lot of challenges and a lot of struggles. So the perfectionist is terrified of being discovered because they weren't actually loved for their vulnerabilities and their pains. And someone wasn't able to sit with them and because of that, sit with them in just their experience. They actually were like, if I have needs, if I have emotions, my parents have maybe shamed those emotions, shamed those needs. They don't pay attention to me. My father's too busy working, but maybe if I become the best at football, the best at this, something he likes, then he'll love me.
Yeah. You know, that's so funny. I definitely think I used to enter relationships with my perfectionist angle as a person. I'm such a perfectionist. And it was definitely more, I loved the surface level of what it looked like to everyone else. And then when I started working on myself is why I said, oh, this is just for us. And that's why now it's so important for me to not make sure everyone knows how perfect it is. It's more focused. Okay, I really want to be vulnerable, because when I care so much about the perfection, it was so surface level. I didn't actually bother with emotions. I just care more about how things look. Like even when my boyfriend would piss me off when I was younger, because I had an 8-year relationship, and I think sometimes I forget to mention that, in my 20s, most of my 20s. And I remember, I mean, I guess I don't like public conflict, but it was one of my things where he would irritate me and I would send him a text while we're out, and I say, we're going to discuss this at home. But then I continued to be, so it's not like I still gave him the cold shoulder. I continued to be like, yeah, that's my babe. And you know, the holding hands and all that. And I like despised him in that moment, but I needed everyone else to know we're good. Don't worry about it. So,
which on some way that's like maybe punishing him, but it can also be like, if we're good, then we're good.
Well, I'm not going to be like, what? Are you cheating on me again?
Right.
So it's
while
like,
you're out.
Maybe let's wait till he goes. But that's also, you shouldn't challenge your partner and belittle them in public regardless.
No.
But I was just giving one example that's, I would say, maybe a bit of a bad example. Okay, so what about the savior mask?
Oh, man, that's like, I love that one personally.
That's so you.
I'm going to take care of everybody, save them, make sure they're okay.
Because
fix my partner, help them.
They're going to stay around forever.
Right. If I'm valuable because I take care of them, think of that woman who was freshly out of a breakup. I'll help her heal and then she'll want to be with me.
She'll depend on me because I'm not enough. But if I do things to keep her, like if I do things to make her need me, that will be enough. Because me as a person is not enough for someone to stick around.
Right, like my values and my caretaking. And if she doesn't have something to fix, she won't need me, right? And, you know, you think about it, it's like the perpetual wound is that I'm never enough. So I have to keep being more. Much like the perfectionist, it's just rooted differently.
So then if she actually healed, if you were still in your that thing, if she actually healed, you'll probably be like, something's missing. I feel like that spark is gone. Oh, because I'm not broken anymore.
Right. I would probably still desire them, but they're like, I don't have anything to fix. Like, to stay with you, I have to believe I have a flaw.
Right.
Like, I have to fix something. I have to heal something. Like, the savior loves a project. Loves a project, loves the addict, loves the person who doesn't want to fully show up, who's unavailable, who lives somewhere else in a different country, who never wants to meet up, who doesn't want to face, right? Like, all, just think of all the, like, how can I save them from their own dysfunction if only they read this book I suggested? Oh, you got in the car, this podcast is playing? I don't know what it is. We should listen to it, right? Like, it's the desire to want to save someone, but really it's the not being able to be with the fact that we don't feel valuable unless we're taking care of people, which we learn as a kid.
What about the performer mask?
Performer goes with humor too, right? Like, it's really, which I also have that one
they
too.
They use humor to kind of never get too close to somebody. Oh, tell me about your dad died. Ah, you know, it was a rainy day. So, you know, shit was happening and it just made sense because after that, I also got served for my divorce. So
right. Like there's a way to, it's fine. Yeah. It's good. There's a deflection. Like,
at least that day, he didn't tell me I was a failure. Am I right? Anyway, funeral is at 3 p.m. If you can attend, that would be great.
Anything to distance from the pain.
Yeah.
And like in conflict, using humor, sarcasm, things like that to not, you know, to be performative. Maybe you're the most outspoken person at a party. Maybe you are a comedian. Maybe, you know, you just have a way. Your charisma has also been developed to actually avoid closeness, which none of these skills are bad.
Yeah.
They're obviously essential. Humor is one of the best skills in relationship. It's just when humor is used to distance that there's a problem, and sarcasm is used to not actually be close to the things that are vulnerable.
Exactly. Like when people use sarcasm to be self-deprecating. And at first it's kind of funny, like, yeah, I'm such an asshole. Like, I'm so ugly. Or like, yeah, I'm just such a cunt. And it's like, okay, it's funny. But then when you keep saying it, eventually like, okay, dude, is this how you actually feel about yourself?
Right.
Just be honest. Cause it is.
Right. It's like, if I point to the thing through deprecative humor, then you won't be able to point to the thing.
Yeah, like I have toes that go all different directions. Like they all unfriended each other on Facebook. And I remember when I was younger, my boyfriend, my best friend, made fun of me for my toes. To this day, I get really weird to wear open toe. Like whenever I wear open toe, I feel so brave. And
I realize, your bravery.
Thank you. And then I realize if I start making jokes about it, no one else is going to be able to do it. So then I started doing that, you know?
Yeah, you take it away.
Like the joke I just made him on my toes.
Which was really good. They unfriended each other
on
Facebook.
Yeah, they used to be besties. They got, you know, mimosas.
They're like, we're all going in different directions.
They got mimosas every Saturday. And one of my toes, you know, she hooked up with the other toe's ex-boyfriend. And after
they're not friends.
They parted ways. They unfriended each other. They blocked each other. They just stay like this.
They blocked each other.
Yeah. It's because I've broken my toes so many times that they just will go. So me making that joke, now you will see me in open toes. Open toes.
That's
shoes.
Brave. That is brave.
Okay, then the next one we have is the Playboy.
Yeah, the Playboy, Playgirl. That's the one where we're like slick, charismatic, wheeler dealer, you know, hooking up, being seen as like suave, that we've got
really,
it all together, sexualized. Yeah, oh my gosh, yeah. Like there's, my value is in my external. My value is in my conquest. My value, we will seek validation through arousal, through being desired, through having people long for us.
Ah.
Thirst trapping, right?
Through like being desired, but like that's how it makes me feel valuable, but I don't actually want to stay around.
Yeah, and I think it can be sourced differently between men and women. It probably looks a little different. In not that men can't be like, their whole Instagram is them shirtless. And again, I'm not shaming that that might be a model or that might be a way that someone has a job. I'm just talking about like the intention behind it is what matters. So it's like if someone's whole persona is the sexualization of themselves, if someone's whole persona in their friendship group is how many women they get or how many, you know, probably not men they get because of the way we socialize people, you know, the more men you hook up with is not seen as a status thing, but the more women you hook up with, it is. So there's this, like, if you see how much power I have from a desire perspective, you again won't see within.
Because you secretly don't love yourself. That's why I always say loving yourself is the end of all. That relationship is the end of all. And I always tell people, if you, because people always ask me, how do you love yourself? What does that mean? And I go, because I don't base my love on my looks. Because if I base my love on my looks, how much I love myself, then it means the first person who rejected me or the first person that told me, oh yeah, you're not cute, it would break me. Because I don't actually have any self-love unless someone else tells me I'm lovable. So that's why it has nothing to do with my looks. The self-love comes from inside, where I know I'm going to be okay if you leave. I know I'm going to be okay if you tell me that I'm stupid, even though that used to be my insecurity. But now I know that you don't actually know me. So, or I know I'm going to be okay if I lose my job tomorrow. I know I'm going to be okay. Because why? Because I have me.
There's a deep sense of trust in yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm trusting myself. I may not trust other people, but like, I trust myself. Okay, the next one is the good guy, good girl.
Yeah, I want to say too about sometimes we source validation through arousal, just with the Playgirl Playboy, but people can do this in general. It's like, I feel not chosen, but when we hook up, I get the elation of arousal. So it treats my pain of not being chosen. So that's why friends with benefits can be a great way to soothe abandonment and rejection wounds. And when we just dance in casual relationships, we're also controlling the depth of intimacy. So now getting to the good guy, good girl, that's presenting as being so good. I'm a good guy. I'm different than other guys. I'm a good girl. I'm better than other ones who hurt you, the ones who lie. I'm better than the men who are manipulative and controlling. So there's a saying from Robert Glover, who wrote a book called No More Mr. Nice Guy. And he says that good guys are anything but good.
Literally. That's literally the first red flag.
It's manipulation.
Exactly. If you have to tell someone how much of a good person you are, you're most likely not.
Oh my God, I remember working with this person whose ex was a massive cheater. And he wrote me a message telling me how good of a guy he was. And I was like, just be a good guy. Like, you don't have to convince me. Like, I didn't reply to him, but I remember reading it and being like, he's got it all wrong. Like, all their friends don't like him because he's got no ethics. He's got no morals. He's got no integrity. And like, going and telling everyone he's a good guy doesn't make him a good guy. Being a good guy makes you a good guy, you know, like actually living that truth. But when our kindness is a way that we create safety, because we learn that as kids, so that's why it's important to recognize that for people who this might relate for you, is if your kindness created safety for you as a kid, and it's like, if everyone's happy and I'm good and I can manage my environment, then I'm safe. So even though it is a manipulation to try to get people to come close, right? The source of it is from a survival strategy. But as an adult, it doesn't work. It's manipulative. It's like, and you're also denying your shadow. And if you deny it, it really is shadow, right? Like, it's the shadow. It's toxicity masquerading as goodness.
Yeah. I mean, the good guy, good girl is also part of the martyr.
Right. Right.
And you're sacrificing yourself, but you want something in return.
Look how good I am. And if you don't notice my goodness, if you don't choose me, then you're going to see another side of me.
And that's scary.
Right.
Even hearing that. Okay. What about the damsel in distress mask?
That's the, like, I'm tied up. I'm on a train track. Yeah. I'm at the top of a tower. I think Disney is probably to blame for a lot of this.
Disney has taught a lot of women that, you know, I'm on the top of a tower. Someone needs to save me. So you always have to be like,
right. And then also this idea that men need to be the knight in shining armor and save, you know, so that one is presenting as like, I have something that you need to fix because I need you to feel valid and have a space in my life. Which this doesn't mean a healthy dependency is, you know, like my wife, she'll often ask me to open a jar, which I'm pretty sure she can open. I'm pretty confident. Yeah. But I love that she does it, because if I'm the reason she has access to peanut butter, that's pretty awesome. I feel pretty awesome.
But that's not because she's putting a mask of damsel in distress. No. And that's not because you're putting the mask of martyr. It's actually because from the book, men are from Mars and women are from Venus, they talk about how when it comes to relationships, we want the genders, all various genders, but for men and women, we want different things and we don't realize it. So the reason, even though she can open the jar, what men need is to feel needed. And no, what men need is to feel praised.
Yeah.
So when you praise him, oh my God, you opened that for me. He feels needed. He feels like a man. And he also feels like you can trust him in the relationship. Yeah. That's why a lot of times women accidentally will do that thing where, oh, it's raining outside. Grab your jacket. Grab your umbrella. Hey, don't wear those shoes. You know what happened last time. You do this. And we're thinking, I'm being caring. I'm making him feel seen. No, that's what you need in the relationship. Us women, I need you to hear me. I need you to feel seen. So when you do grab your jacket, blah, blah, oh, he cares about me. I feel seen. That's what we need. When we do the tagay, what happens? He shuts down. She doesn't trust me enough to be the man in the relationship. She doesn't trust me enough to think that I know how to handle the rain.
Right.
Because it's belittling him and we don't realize, but I'm being helpful. You're not.
Isn't it amazing just how like men and women just, this idea that we have no differences is, I mean, it's silly. Preposterous. But at the same time, just knowing these subtle little things, like as you said, she's not like, I need you to open peanut butter. She's like, I love you. Can you do this?
Because it makes you feel good.
I love it.
And it's such a small little thing. Because I've talked about it before and somebody said, well, that's manipulation because you're still, no, you're making your partner feel good. And then in return, yeah, your partner is going to make you feel good too. That's usually what happens. People fall in love with you based on how you make them feel. What's so bad about making your partner feel good? Isn't that the whole part of a loving relationship?
Healthy reciprocation.
Yes, I can open my own jar. Yes, I can grab my own mug. But wouldn't it be nice to just make my partner feel good, like I need him in that moment?
Right. That mask of damsel in distress is really exactly as we're saying, like presenting as I you now have to identify as needing to be saved, which you, if that's the way you keep people close, you'll keep it, right? And so it's like, if you were complete, whole, didn't need to be saved, but also have needs, right? Yeah. It's like, how do I be in a healthy relationship with needs?
And you will definitely lose yourself.
100%.
Okay. The other one is the spiritual.
Oh, the bypasser.
The spiritual mask.
Right. It's like, if I align my chakras, if I have enough crystals, if I, you know, bypass it through relationship to God. Again, we're not saying that there's not value to spirituality or a necessity.
I have crystals right now in my sock.
Do you actually?
For good luck.
Do you actually?
It's right here.
Oh my God, you do. That's amazing. That's amazing. I usually keep a crystal beside my bed, a jasper stone, because our son's named Jasper.
That's cool. Well, because there's no pocket, so.
I often have crystals. But that's the thing is we're not invalidating the power and need for spirituality for a human, of course. But we're saying it can be used as a mask and a way to bypass, like by using spiritual language and spiritual practices to not be with the depth of our pain or suffering. It's like, just give it up to God. It's like, yes, there is a part where we want to let go of feelings, but we still need to process them and understand them. So yeah, that's it.
Yeah, it reminds me when I was in university and we had an exam and other people were studying and I didn't study for the test and I decided to just be a jokester and everyone else was studying before the exam and I said, you know what, you guys? God is with me. I'm going to pray.
How'd it go?
And they said, V, are you sure? We have like 10 extra minutes. Just look over. I don't need to look over. God has got my back. I'm going to say a little prayer and it's going to be fine. And what happened? I failed. I got to fail, obviously. I failed the test because God was taking a day off.
And
yeah, I needed to study. So that's when you take it like a little too far. Or those people who think they're so spiritual where they don't need to work on themselves because they did ayahuasca once. So I don't know if you know what that is, but
I've done ayahuasca once. But I didn't think I was healed after. I was I got
every
some
time
stuff.
I make a joke, you have the breathe tattoo. Why? I'm like, you did ayahuasca once. I did ayahuasca.
But I didn't leave ayahuasca thinking it would solve all my problems.
Fair.
Right. I did it as like the desire to want to go deeper into understanding them.
What would you say? What do you think is possible for somebody who picks up the book Liberated Love? Like, what can they get from it and what can they expect?
Oh, thank you. Beautiful question. I would say what's possible for someone is to actually change how they orient to their pain, their history, their patterns, their families. Like everything that they've desired to create in their life through relationship, which will then transfer to their life. Like, the quality of your life is determined by the quality of your relationships. Like, full stop, demonstrated by the research. And it doesn't, that's not just romantic relationships, that's every relationship in your life. And we're saying, here is a book that will go through the blueprint of why you do the things you do, where it comes from, what do you want to create, how do you change it? And it can be read by single people or people in relationship. People in couples can do it together. And we recommend that for couples. And there's just this awesome opportunity for people to actually experience liberation. But how do you do that? Because what we're all talking about is, like, easy to say, another thing to do. My wife and I have walked everything in this book. We've done everything in this book. We've put it all into this book. And we know it works because we live it. And so my promise to people, if they actually read the book and do it, is everything they've desired out of relationship and healing and what's possible for them in love and life is available.
I love that. Okay, I'll definitely leave a link where you guys can find the book. And if, based on what he said, I will add one little note, and that is, I forget if it's Harvard or Stanford. Let's just go with Harvard. Harvard did a research, an 80-year research about the pursuit of happiness. What is happiness? And they decided to do that research based on people from rich families and people from poor families, so different neighborhoods. And they started following these kids from a young age up until they were 80 years old. So obviously researchers right. had to keep switching. And they kept trying to figure out what makes people happy. So when they were young, they interviewed, what do you believe will bring you happiness when you grow up? And everyone said the same things that you always hear: money, fame, being a playboy, and things like that. Rarely did you ever hear, like, good relationships.
Right, right.
Love, or maybe they said love, but like
reliable partnership.
Yeah, traveling. Yeah. But it was, most people said, I want to be famous, or I want to be super rich. That will make me happy. They all said that. And then they followed these kids throughout their life, and they started watching what happened. Some people found love. Some people didn't. Some people got divorced. Some people stayed in marriages. Some people were rich. Some people were poor. Some people died. Some people stayed alive. And what they found was that the people who lived the longest and lived the healthiest lives were the people who were in happy relationships. So not the people who were in relationships but needed to end it. Those people didn't live that long. But they noticed that not only, it's the truth, but they noticed that not only were they less prone to diseases, they were less prone to depression, they didn't care if they were rich or poor. The happiest people, regardless of their wealth, were the people who cared and focused and put first their relationships. People forget it's only romantic. It's
all
friends yeah. and it's friendships. It's love. But your relationships in your life will lead to your happiness. If you're looking in your life to be happy, it's the relationships. If you're looking in your life to live a long, full life, it's the relationships in your life that you're building. So that's the importance of the relationship with yourself, your friends, and your lover. And that book, I think it's wonderful for, like you said, it's from partners to a single person, because you are training yourself to figure out how to have liberated love with yourself, liberate love with those around you, and liberate love with your partner. So it's definitely just a book that you can pick up and keep reading whatever stage you are in your life. And I think everyone should get it. So again, thank you so much for coming. Where can people find you?
You can find me at Create the Love on Instagram. You can find the book wherever you buy books, liberated-love.com. And you can find my podcast, the Mark Rose Podcast, wherever you listen to it, or on YouTube. And you can listen to the recent episode on shadow work with Violetta.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you guys so much for listening for another episode of Almost Adulting. And I will see you on Saturday if you're subscribed to my premium podcast, or I will see you next week. Love you. Bye.